Okay, this is Joan Weaver, and I'm here with Rosetta Grass from the Kinsley Library, and we're interviewing Beverly Snyder Anderson in her home in Pratt, Kansas. It's November 3rd, 2012. And we're interviewing in regard to the 1979 Tractorcade and the AAM activities. Did you live on a farm at this time?
Yes, we lived on a farm just about 3 miles north of Lewis.
And how big was the farm, or what kind of operation was it?
Well, my husband wanted to do everything, so we leased 5 quarters of ground. So we grew corn and milo and soybeans, and we had about 30 mother cows, so that kept us busy in the winter, and we also had 30 sows. That kept us plenty busy.
Was at this time in the 70s, was this your sole source of income, or did either of you work outside to support the farm?
I was a teacher for a while at the Lewis Public Schools, but otherwise farming was supposed to be our big deal.
So how did you hear about or become involved with the AAM?
Well, mostly through our neighbors, and I don't remember what the first contact was, but we had a great bunch of fellow farmers and neighbors in that area, and of course we moved there in 75, so we were rather new to the area, but were taken to it like ducks to water, and my husband was so committed to being a farmer. And we were not doing well. And in fact, every year we got to farm, he just considered it a blessing. We didn't care how far we were going in debt. If we were allowed to farm another year, that was good. So I stayed awake at night thinking about it, but he never did.
And why weren't you doing well? What do you think was the reason?
Because it cost more to produce the crops than we were getting when we sold them. And we were young farmers. We did not inherit land or machinery and equipment. We had $20,000 when we started, and the banks very generously loaned us another $230,000, and that's by the time we finished, and that's what we were doing. So, and we were connected with FHA, and trying to get them to, and well, we were, to back our loans and stuff, so we had a continuing dialogue with them, and it was a struggle. It was a struggle, but that's what we wanted to do, so that's what we did.
And the banks were very willing to loan.
Oh, very willing to loan. Sure, we had five quarters of leased ground that we didn't own. We put two circles, two irrigation systems on that, and borrowed money to purchase equipment and livestock, and then we bought a 15-acre farm site with a building site that we did purchase, and all of that was done with borrowed money.
There wouldn't be any collateral for this, would there?
Doesn't seem like it. We had nothing. We had nothing, but we did have, I do recall we had about $20,000 to start with. Mm-hmm. So we started out when we moved to Lewis working for a fellow farmer, Alvin Wheaton. And it wasn't too long after that Bob Bogert decided to retire from farming. And that's who we got the ground leased from. And Bob Bogert or the Snyders were related to the Bogerts. That's kind of how we got back to the Lewis area from Arizona. My husband loved the irrigation and the center pivot systems and just the way of farming compared to southern Arizona that was getting pretty dry, and the water was, you had to drill deeper and deeper to get to the, you know, to find a well if you were lucky. So that's kind of why we chose Kansas. It was a big, well-thought decision, we thought, when as he was serving in the Army and before we started, you know, on our career in agriculture.
About how much did an irrigation system for one circle cost? Do you have any idea?
I do not recall that. Hmm. I don't know.
Because I know...
It was all a lot of money.
Yeah. There were several that this was coming in right at this time, and and farmers were being encouraged.
Sure. Sure. It was a great way to conserve water compared to, you know, I guess other ways of irrigation, but it was so sandy in Lewis that the sprinklers were well suited for that type of land.
Well, I know you mentioned Alvin Wheat. I know he was involved in the AAM.
Yes.
So you maybe came to this group.
Well, you know, we visited with our fellow farmers every day on a daily basis, just about sharing and talking and visiting. And my husband was on the township board, and as well as some of the other people I'm sure you've already talked to and stuff. And we just got right in really fast to the community, and that's what we were trying to do. And it was a great place to live.
You were in your 30s, I guess it would be, right? I'm trying to think. 46, 76, 56.
Yes.
In your 30s.
Yeah.
So some of the other people we've interviewed were more in their 50s, so you may have been
young. We were young.
And did you have any children at this time?
We adopted Amy in, she was a year and a half, so that would have been about 78. So just had one little one.
And before the big tractor day in Washington, D.C., which we're going to get to, what were the initial involvement and activities that you did with AAM?
There was a lot of small tractorcades and demonstrations, even in our local town of Lewis, and I can remember Belpre, and also to Topeka. My husband drove the first long tractorcade we went to was, I don't remember the year, but prior to the D.C. tractorcade, they probably a year or so prior to that, he drove that 730 John Deere with no cab or heater or anything to Topeka. And I let him do that. That wasn't going to be too long to be gone. So I can recall a lot of meetings we went to, a lot of discussions of just chairs sitting in a circle, a large circle, and people talking about what we could do and what we thought was right. And of course, communication in those days was a lot different than now. And there was always people like Daryl Miller that would, you know, bring us the news from, I guess you'd call them our leaders, and tell what they were thinking and get input.
Well, the word that comes up is parity. How would you describe or define parity?
Well, in my simple way, I would just say it's a fair price. I know at the time that we did go on the tractorcade, wheat was selling for less than it sold in 1946. So if we'd been getting a fair price, we may have been able to keep farming. It just didn't seem fair. It's because all the equipment and expenses were much greater. So I would just call it a fair price.
Now, did you go out at all to these? I know Mr. Miller went out to other communities and they... Did you go with him to those?
No.
So you were just involved locally?
Yes.
Did you work at the Lewis office?
No.
No?
No. Well, because in 79, actually in 79 I was no longer teaching by then and was just working on the farm and with my husband, which was great. I thought if we would have been making money, it would have been great. Would have been perfect. But so I helped. I had a long history of growing up on a farm and driving tractors. So, of course, that's why my husband said he married me, because I could drive a tractor. So,
my husband.
I did that a lot when I was growing up. So, and I did. I continued to do it for a long time.
So. And so, a year before, I think, so it would be in probably the winter of 77, they went up to Topeka, and then, and then in 7, anyway, you didn't go there. Do you remember how your husband felt about driving that tractor up and the meetings they had? And
He was cold.
Yeah.
but he would have not missed that for anything. And he was very adamant about trying to tell the story so that people like us could have a life on a family farm.
Who did they meet with in that first time? You know, were they meeting with like the federal senators? Or? Or why Topeka?
Well, they were at the Capitol, of course, and I know, I believe they did meet with some of the legislatures and stuff. And in fact, there was a hearing, I believe, that they attended. There may have been a hearing scheduled for that time that they were in attendance to.
They took 2 or 3 days to get up there?
I don't recall that. I don't recall where they would have stopped. They may not have.
Well, the tractors didn't go very fast.
No.
Did they,
so. When we went to D.C., we averaged about 10 miles an hour. So I do not recall that. I do recall he didn't drive back. They loaded that tractor up.
Trailered that tractor back. Well, let's maybe we'll move up more to the getting closer to the 79 one to D.C. How did the other people in Lewis feel about the AAM and your activities and its tractor caves? And were people supportive? Or
I always felt they were very supportive because Lewis had a population of maybe 300 in that area, and just about all of us were farmers. They were very supportive. They raised, money was donated for the D.C. Tractorcade, and so we that went had no expenses that we had to pay for. It was all from donated money. So I would say it was very well supported.
And how about your extended family, like your mother, when we just met, a lovely woman. What did she think when she heard that you were involved with
it? They were supportive. Okay. Most people maybe we're in a little disbelief when we actually got going to Washington, D.C. But I think a lot of my family's been, I don't really have any family members except for my mother. I didn't have, at the time, I had no other family members in Kansas, mm-hmm. except for my husband and my daughter. So the other people, I don't, that just go to the store and buy food, I don't think thought about it much, and that's why we wanted to do it, is to tell the story so people would think about it mm-hmm. a little bit.
And then we haven't said this on the tape yet, but you went and your husband did not. You want to explain the reasoning?
Well, we kind of had a preview that there was going to be a big tractorcade to D.C. and they kept talking about it, and then finally it was really going to happen. So I can remember very distinctly. My husband came in and said, well, you could either go. We're going to be, first he would say, we are going to be involved in this tractorcade. And I said, okay. And either you can go and I will stay and take care of the hogs and the livestock, or I will go and you can take care of the mother cows that are calving and the 30 sows, which some were scheduled to farrow at that time. And it did not take me too long to decide that it would be much easier, I thought, to go on the tractorcade, and he agreed it would have been difficult for me to do all that. Although I could do a lot, but it would have been hard. So.
And then, what about your daughter?
My daughter was 3 years old then, and our other good neighbors, a couple of them took care of her while Rocky was taking care of the animals and stuff. So if it hadn't been for our neighbors, he would have been up a creek. But well, one of those, most of the time she stayed with the wolves, with Jack and Dasko. So.
And what tractor did you drive?
4020 John Deere. And I don't know what year it is, but you know that tractor is still up on the farm mm-hmm. at Lewis. And I told my brother-in-law, who now lives there, that he could never sell it. And he said he wouldn't. But one time he needed another tractor, and one banker, he said, did not appreciate the fact that he did not have a trade-in. And so he had to go find another banker that understood. So he still has 4020 up on the farm.
And the Scheifers still have their tractor.
Ah.
And it would be nice if they had a place where they could be kept.
If I had a lot of money, I would take that 4020 and have it restored or cleaned up and repainted and everything. Might happen someday, but I don't know. I know it's been sitting outside. I don't think it's been shedded. So.
Stryfler's is shedded.
Yeah, they're good. They have sheds. I don't think our 4020 is. But, so,
so you decided to go, and now tell us a little bit about the group that went, with other people that...
There were three tractors from Lewis that went, and of course one was the Scheiflers, Ed and Marge, and the other was Jim and Jean Titus. And Jim Titus, who lived just a mile from us, right on the way to the Wolves, I followed him just about the whole way. And he had a sign on the back of his tractor that Marge Scheifler had designed, and it said, "Carter gave us a bum steer," and it had a picture of this really skinny steer on it. So I followed that tractor the whole way. And then there were other tractors, approximately 20 that came from the surrounding smaller towns. But those are the three that went from Lewis, and then also Lester Durley. He drove a farm truck with tanks in the back for fuel. So he was our fuel man. Mm-hmm. And Marge and Ed had a travel trailer, and Lester and I stayed with them in that little travel trailer.
And the Millers?
And the Millers, went. Yes, of course the Millers went. And Darryl was so good at kind of being, helping us get organized, and did a lot of calling and talking to media, and trying to figure out where we were going to park that night. I believe he was usually ahead of us, trying to figure out mm-hmm. stuff.
So is that the whole group then? I'm trying to think. I think it is, isn't it?
Those are the ones that were there every day. I know that Jack Wolf started, they had purchased a new camper and they rolled it. There was another tractor, Stapleton's.
Oh, that's right.
Dub and Clara Stapleton, and they had another young man that was a diesel mechanic drive their tractor.
You remember his name?
No, but it's in my diary. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And I just read it, but I still don't remember it.
And then you were talking about Jack.
He rolled his camper going on the way to Topeka, so they did not go with us, but when we got to D.C., Jack was there.
He had flown?
Yes.
Flown in?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So your preparations for going, how did you get ready?
Well, I know we checked out 4020, and I don't recall ever having to do anything much to it. It was our main tractor, so it was in good shape. And
it had a cab on it.
Right? It did have a cab on.
Heater?
No, not really a heater, just the
engine.
The engine heat leaks up through the holes in the cab was basically it. And I don't recall ever being real cold while I was in the cab. But we dressed warmly, and I don't recall any other specific other than figuring out what little Amy was going to do while I was gone mm-hmm. and things. So wasn't a lot of preparation, just pack a bag, a small bag.
And this wasn't a very big trailer.
Oh no, it was. I slept on the table, so. There were four of us that slept, and that was, you all had to be asleep at the same time.
Mm-hmm. And did Marge do the cooking then? Or?
Oh, yes. She was a wonderful cook. At some places we stopped, they would feed us. But if they didn't, Marge had a meal fit for kings when we got there. And we didn't eat just sandwiches. Oh, no. We had fried chicken and mashed potatoes, I think, and the whole deal. A lot. She was really great.
And she, someone said, you didn't, once you got those tractors rolling in the morning, you didn't stop?
We did stop and have a break, usually in the morning, okay. And maybe 15 minutes or just a little bit, and then a little bit at lunch. But by then, usually, we'd gotten up so early we'd already eaten what lunch we had in the tractor. But we did not have like a lunch or anything. Mm-hmm. We just ate on the go. And then usually there was a small break. in the afternoon, because I remember that distinctly, because a little bit ahead of us was an RV, which was driven by the Chenoweths from Haviland, and they had a potty in there. So I became good friends with the Chenoweths, and I often washed the windows on their RV at night. And anybody else that was...
It was the porta potty.
Yeah, it was the porta potty, and boy, I looked, and if it wasn't around, I was in trouble. But you know, ours worked out just fine. So.
And what time did you get going in the morning?
It varied. As you'll see when you read that diary, the alarms were often set for 4:30, 5 o'clock, one morning maybe 3:30. And we didn't get too much sleep. But when we did sleep, I know that it wasn't hard to get to sleep, but it was often we'd have to get up at 4:30. It took a long time when you had a large group like that to get kind of organized. It was with only communication through CBs. That was all. And it was difficult.
And who was leading the tractor gig?
Well, we always asked that question, who our leader was, because nobody ever knew who that front person was. When you watch the DVD, you will have a picture who I think was our leader from our branch that went out. But I do not know their name or anything. Mm-hmm. And I often thought that, well, you know, if the person in front of us would drive off a cliff, we would just all go. It was...
And you joined the tractor cave right there at Highway 50 in Lewis?
We got together, the South Central group, and I believe it was about 20 tractors. And we got together, and then I drove with Amy, who was 3 years old at the time, as far as Emporia. And then my husband took over, and he drove the tractor the rest of the way to Ben Marble's farm near Topeka, and I came back. And then the next day, it may have been, I'm not sure it was the next day, but it was soon after that that then we drove up and got our tractors and started out the next day.
So. About how many tractors were there in that drive? Well, say when you got to Topeka, how big had the tractor been?
Well, it wasn't too big. Hang on one second.
I might bring that diary over too.
Yeah.
And then we'll have the list of towns and stuff to look at.
But there is one. I did go through this, and I've had this stuck in there. We left Topeka. When we got to Sedalia, which would have been with the Colorado and our group, there were about 163 tractors and 142 support vehicles. So, and when we got to St. Louis, there were about 300 tractors. We got to Greenville, Illinois, there were like 300 to 500. And they estimate, according to newspaper articles, the Washington Post, I put a note, there were about 2,000 tractors. So, and maybe up to 30,000 farmers that were there.
At the tractorcade, or just from your, the...
That would be total, of course, by the time we got there. But so I would, with Colorado, I'm not sure how many were just Kansas tractors, but the Colorado and Kansas was about 160, mm-hmm. with about an equal number of support vehicles.
And then you had other tractorcades joining you as
yes,
you went along.
Yes, along the way, yes.
And that uh-huh. kept swelling the...
Yes. And each, yes. It was always a really a great anticipation to see how many would be with the next group. You know, how many they were, because the top was always top, you know. So you never knew how many there were going to be. But it was always exciting when another group would join.
And they'd come in at the end, or wherever they could get in.
That was always the plan, but you know, farmers don't take orders too good. They're not used to doing that, so mostly they just did what they wanted to. But we did try hard to keep our regions together, so then our support vehicles would mm-hmm. be together, and we would know where our bed was that night, you know. But and it was difficult. There was a lot of whiplash, a lot of slowing down and speeding up, because any time someone would stop, you know, 3 miles ahead of us or 5 miles, you know, it would just start a whiplash deal, and it was hard. And so they thought at one point it would be a good idea to have all the support vehicles follow the tractors. And that did, if I recall correctly, seem to help somewhat. And then they would, toward the end of the day, they would pass and get to the wherever we were staying that night ahead of us. And then, would be trying to find them was always fun. But I know Ed was always great, because usually the driveway that we were entering into this huge lot, whether it was a mall or a fairgrounds or something, he would be there with his cup of tea, I will say. And he would be waving and pointing, you know, the general direction of which we should go, you know. So, but it always worked out. And
and you were going between, say, 10 and 20 miles an hour.
Not 20. We averaged maybe 15, probably at the most, with an average of about 10 miles to the hour.
So the support vehicles were going that slowly also, that must have driven those drivers crazy.
We drove a lot of people crazy.
And you want to say anything about the weather?
The weather started out wet and rainy, and continued to get worse the whole way. And it was cold, and I know in Greenville we stayed a couple days because of snow, a lot of snow, and a lot of the tractor drivers that have blades on their tractors did a lot of community service by pushing snow at the hospital parking lots and things like that while we were stuck there. But it was a lot. You will see. Have you seen a lot of pictures?
I've seen quite a few, but not that many.
There's a lot of snow. There was a lot of snow. The worst was in Cumberland, Maryland, and it was really in the mountains right before we got to D.C. It was awful. And we couldn't stop where we were supposed to stop. In Friendly, I think we were going to stop, and as they said, we would be snowed in there, and we didn't want to be snowed in at that point anywhere.
Right.
So we had to keep going down the hill. Some of them had stopped. Some of them were pulling support vehicles up the hills with chains. And it was so bad. At one point, Jim Titus, he started to go on an exit. You could not see the road very good at all. We were the only ones on the road. And he started to go on an exit. And he didn't know it. You know, instead of going straight, he had just kind of stayed watching the white line a little bit. And had to holler at him and stop. So he turned around and came back, and off we went. And at that point, I remember, you'll read in the diary, that we didn't know if our support vehicles were in front of us or behind us. But usually, because you just couldn't see anything, hardly. And but we kind of figured that maybe they were ahead of us. So that's why we decided to keep going. And it was a good decision, because pretty soon we could hear the CB, and it was hard for me to hear it, but you could hear them. They were coming looking for us, and because they were in the other divided highway across, you know.
Oh, coming back.
Yeah, coming back looking for us. And that was a nice sight that night, because it was dark by then and everything. And so they, of course, had to keep going till they could get turned around and come our direction, and we stopped. It was Lester and Ed, and they wanted to know if I was okay and if they wanted me to drive the tractor. And I said, no. I said, I think I can make it.
Well, maybe we should get on you. That we think you are the only woman, maybe, that went unaccompanied by a husband.
Probably. I'm not sure. But I know there were other women drivers, a couple that I saw. But I don't believe there were any of them that, I think they drove part of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't believe that anybody drove every inch of the way.
Mm-hmm.
Did
anybody spell you?
No, never. Nobody ever drove my 40/20. Sometime we moved it in the parking lot. I think Daryl moved it in the parking lot because he had to rewire. One morning I got in and started up, and this cab filled with smoke, but there was a little wire that shorted out. So I think he moved it and rewired that to get around that little short.
Was that the only difficulty your tractor gave you? Did you have flat tires or anything?
No. The only other difficulty was with the windshield wipers. And I guess a little clip had come off. So we fixed it temporarily. And the only way to fix it good would be to take the top of the cab off. And we couldn't really do that. So we fixed it again. But usually the heat from the inside of the cab and the tractor kept it so it didn't get iced over. It was difficult to see just because there was so much snow and poor visibility everywhere, but in all, the tractor was great except for those two little things.
What about the other tractors in the Lewis contingent? Did they all?
Most of them, if they had a leak or a hydraulic hose leaking or something, they'd put some duct tape on it. I recall that time or two. And there were, of course, some accidents along the way, and that the tractor could not travel any further. Or a camper, but in general, I do not recall a lot of mechanical difficulties, but maybe just small things.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Something else popped in my head. Oh, and then Mr. Durley would come by and give you your fuel. Is that mm-hmm. that's how mm-hmm. you gassed
up? We would fuel up every night, and that's why it was good for us from the South Central Kansas to park kind of close together, so he could go around and fuel everyone up. And then in the daytime, he would find a place and buy fuel and fill up his tanks again.
And then that would last the whole day?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'd last all day.
With the hurricane situation right now, I wonder why they don't have a fuel truck going down filling up all those cars. But
I've wondered that too. Why don't they have generators, big ones, provided by with our taxpayer money is okay, at these service stations that don't have electricity?
That's the other one too, yeah.
Oh well. Didn't seem so hard.
Anyway. Let's see here. Any other special memories about going out on the trip? Now you said sometimes the towns or whatever might feed you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what would that be, the local farm group or
Yes. And then we'd have some pep talks kind of meetings. We would meet and try to figure out ways to make it go more smoothly. I can remember the first big meeting we had, we decided that only the tractor's drivers would vote. And so Lester and Ed and I, we had a meeting at my tractor, and we declared that we were all tractor drivers, so we could all vote. We had a little toast or something, I believe. And so only the tractor drivers were supposed to make policy, and but there wasn't no way to count. If the speaker said something, everyone just said yeah, and or no, and that's the way we kind of decided things. I remember one thing is that we would stop before nightfall, and we wouldn't. And I can't remember the other things, but the next day we just broke all those rules because it was just impossible.
Because of the weather and everything else.
Yeah, just things were so unpredictable.
So about what time did you usually stop then and eat after?
We would try to, I think it just varied a lot depending on how many miles we went and how many times we were stopped. And one of the things I do recall that, of course, going through Missouri, we were not allowed to go on I-70. The governor decided we should go on Highway 50. Which would be a two-lane highway, so we really clogged up a lot of traffic for the local people who were not very appreciative, because if someone needed to go across Highway 50, they had to wait perhaps an hour and a half for us all to cross that one intersection. And sometimes people would try to dart between tractors and, they would make it. Or I can remember one time thinking I was going to hit somebody and did not, because tractors do not have good brakes. They really don't. And so we didn't like all of that, so we stopped in the middle of I-50 at a time or two and stopped until the police would start controlling the intersections and not stopping us to let traffic go by, because they wanted to stop us at a main intersection and let traffic go by. Well, that was very difficult. So we would all stop in the middle of Highway 50, and so we'd drop
stop traffic both ways, from the people going, trying to go weave in and out of us, and from the people coming the opposite way. And then our leaders, whoever they were, had a discussion with the local police and explained that we were a parade and we weren't supposed to stop. So I know we had to do that a couple of times, and finally they got the idea that we were a parade and we're not to be stopped. And we did not stop at stop signs or red lights ever on the whole deal, going through any city. Or we went, my group, when we got to Columbus, Ohio, they split us. Some people went around Columbus, some of us went straight through it. They thought that was a good idea. And the group I was in went straight through downtown Columbus, and we didn't stop at any stoplights.
And how were the police as you went across the country?
I think in general good. They just didn't quite understand how difficult it was, and that it did not work to stop us. It was better to just let us keep going and get us out of their way so they could go about their business, basically, is what worked best. And another thing I remember that really struck me is the people that would stand and watch a lot. They would maybe be on across the right-of-way, standing by a barbed wire fence, and maybe that was their farm or something, so they just drove to it and stopped there, and would just have their overcoats and their boots on with their hands, you know, in their pockets. Some of them would be looking. Some would be standing on overpasses and just be waving, you know, just like they were trying to say, give them help. and some of them you would see, I always thought, well, the guy that was just standing there with his hands in his pocket and just looking, he was the one that was just sad that he wasn't going with us, mm-hmm. you know. And I think that may have happened, that when they saw how big it was, mm-hmm. I would dare to say there were some that wished they had joined in too. And that was, to me, good.
What made the difference? Why did you go and other people not go? What went into that decision? I never asked that question.
Well, I don't know, but maybe the people that were struggling more financially felt the need to tell the story about the family farm and how there were becoming less and less family farmers and more corporate farmers.
And this was unusual behavior for a farmer.
Yes, yeah. Because most farmers, all they want to do is to scratch in the dirt, so to speak, and grow food. And I know most small farmers that I knew thought they had the most important job in the world, is to feed the people. And it was serious stuff, but also something they loved to do. I mean, you have to love it to do it, mm-hmm. and to go in debt. And if you have a bad year, just it didn't mean a thing, because everyone of our say, well, it'll be better next year, you know. And but I also think there were people that did better, maybe had a better start than people like us did too. Mm-hmm. I know they were there too, that had their families had been farming for a lot of time, and maybe it wasn't quite so hard, but I think it was hard for everybody mm-hmm. back then, and it was scary to think what might be happening to the family farm. Mm-hmm.
Let's see, who was it? I think it was Daryl. He didn't put it on the tape, so he asked me to ask other people about church services or things like that. Do you remember that?
Yes,
on the trip?
Yes, I do remember. There were a couple of times we went to a church service, kind of a makeshift affair, but there was a
Was it in the local church, or was it amongst, you know, in your tractor cave that you were...
I don't think it was in a local church. Mm-hmm. I know there was Father Andy mm-hmm. that traveled with us, and I'm not sure where he was from.
Colorado.
Colorado. I think that's right. And I do recall him. But there was not a lot of church mm-hmm. meetings, but I do remember one or two.
Well, you would have only been out a couple
yeah,
of Sundays.
Yeah, that's right, a couple of Sundays.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. It was 2 weeks. I was gone. It took us 2 weeks to get there. And then I was there at D.C. for 5 days before I flew home.
I guess we never asked that, too. What day of the week did you leave on?
I don't know.
You'll have to look that up.
I'm sure you can Google that.
Yeah, I can Google that, any other memories in particular? Was it Indianapolis where you had a bad snow thing?
It was Greenville.
Greenville.
And I believe in Indianapolis also we had to stay perhaps an extra day. You will read that in there.
Well, you don't want to put it on here.
I don't remember for sure. Being snowed in wasn't all bad. I do remember the one in Greenville, I believe, is where, you know, a lot of people didn't use their campers if they had one, or maybe they borrowed it, and of course everything was freezing up. But I remember between three campers, we did have a functional bathroom. One of them had water, and another one had maybe a stove that worked. And so you just had to be in the right little camper to whatever you needed to do at one point, because it was kind of sad. And
on the way there, did you laundromat, or did you have enough clothes to get you through?
Laundromat. Mm-hmm. Whenever, only when we were snowed in. Mm-hmm. I don't recall ever going to the laundromat after we camped. Just at a regular stop. I don't recall. Of course, I'm sure we may not have smelled too good, but we didn't really care.
And how did you keep in touch with back home?
I called a time or two, not very much. I guess we used a payphone.
Yeah, unheard of in this day where you can call your family
right,
six
and
times
of course,
a day.
My husband wasn't home sitting by the telephone.
Right.
You know, he had things to be doing too, so there was not a lot of communication home, actually, but there was some. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm trying to think what else do we have. These are new questions that I'm thinking of.
Did you go to the legislatures?
At D.C.?
Yes. Okay, wait a minute. Let's get us into D.C.
Mm-hmm.
first.
Yeah.
Okay, so you all met up where outside of D.C.?
Our group was, of the Kansas South Central group, ended up at a campsite. It's called Cherry Hill Camp City, I believe. And it was north of the Capitol on the Beltway.
Okay, so what mm-hmm. state is this in then?
That I believe it
Maryland?
Was in Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And, of course, when we got so messed up in the mountains, there was a lot of, you know, some states, some went on, some split apart, and I don't know who decided to do all that. Of course, I just followed Jim. And his bum steer. And but we ended up, there were about our 20 tractors there. And then we went in on...
Now, that was all that was in
that
campground?
Was
just your 20?
Yes.
Then these others were all in other campgrounds
mm-hmm.
or other
yes.
places?
Yes, and not campgrounds. Some of them were just on fields, mm-hmm. in fields and stuff. Of course, We stopped at Frederick and parked in somebody's field and went in to D.C. and then kind of got the communication tomorrow, I think it was February the 5th, is the day that everyone was going to converge on the Capitol. So then I recall that we went back, and it was about 40 miles, I think, or something. And
but you were just doing that with a support vehicle.
Right, then the driver, one of us, I think Lester... I can't remember what vehicle it was, took the drivers back up to Frederick, and we got in our tractors and then went to the campground. And then the next day, then we started for the Capitol. And the other groups were, of course, larger, because we just had our 20 by then, but we got there.
So then as you're starting to head into the Capitol, all mm-hmm. of these groups start merging
converging,
and they were coming from the south and
yes.
the north and the west.
Yes, four people from Washington, D.C. It was kind of interesting on the whole trip, because at one point, it wasn't too far from the Capitol, the police did stop us at an intersection so the local traffic could cross through. And
And the policeman did stop right at my tractor and was standing there. And I don't know who took the picture of me leaning out the cab with the policeman standing with his back against the tractor. And there was another policeman waving the traffic on to hurry up and go across because these farmers aren't going to sit here too often, kind of. But the people in the cars were going slow. They wanted to kind of see, you know, look what was going on, and the cops were going up. And at one point, he waved at the policeman that was in front of my tractor to come over there. So he started to walk away, and he turned around, and he went like, stay there. I'm like, okay, I'm not moving until you tell me. And
was he surprised to see a woman in the tractor?
I don't even know if he much cared. He was pretty serious. We did not chit-chat. So that was kind of the whole time. People wanted to do what they were going, but they wanted to slow down a bit to see what it was, too. So it was kind of funny. But and then when we did continue getting just a few blocks from the Capitol, I know that one in our group, it was one of the tractors from Haviland, bumped a police car that had cut right in and kind of slammed his brakes on. So I think the consensus was it was kind of a planned stop. And so we all stopped in our group and while he was getting his ticket, basically. But it just kind of went on and on. And so some of our leaders say, how much longer? They said, 10 minutes. We said, okay. 10 minutes, he still wasn't out. So he said, okay. At that time, there was one lane free. Mm-hmm. It was a two-lane deal, so the left-hand lane cars were traveling. So we got the order from the CD to block all lanes so we could continue. So I just pointed 40-20 at a little angle and put it in low-low and just crept forward, just inching forward. But the cars would keep trying to go through until finally, I said, look, they all stop pretty soon. Someone's going to get bumped. And but they stopped, so then the police would come to my door and said, you need to back up. So I would say, okay. And I would back up into the right lane, but another tractor down the ways would go out and block the left lane. So when he'd go down and tell him, he'd back up, and then someone else would back. Until finally, and I believe it was a lady police officer that was trying to give Daryl Chenoweth a ticket. And then we were clear to go after that. I recall a lot of anxiety about what was going on ahead of us because some were already there about tear gas and that cranes were moving tractors, which was not true. And so there was a lot of anticipation about what was actually happening or going to happen there. And most of it wasn't too serious, except for there were some occasions when a tractor with a blade did mow over some police motorcycles or push some cars, and of course they got hauled off rapidly. And I believe they did throw some mace or tear gas into a tractor cab. And so there were some minor injuries, but I don't think a lot.
Now, did you drive your tractor all the way down to the mall?
Oh. Definitely, right to the steps of the Capitol, of course. And the three of us from Lewis were sightseeing on our tractors. We drove by the White House and did the loop around the mall and everything. Everything was fine. And the weather was nice that first day. It was nice. And then we had a big rally, so we parked our three tractors. We're kind of on a side street. Many of the tractors were parked on the mall. Our three were parked on a side street. And then we had a meeting on the steps of the Capitol. And, of course, there were police and riot gear everywhere. A lot. Mm-hmm. A lot. And which was pretty interesting to most of us farmers. And had a meeting. And
did you feel threatened by the police?
Intimidated? Well, not really, because I knew it was kind of normal when there were large demonstrations that they had to be there. But it was interesting to look further up on the Capitol at different levels and see them standing with rifles, you know, and stuff. And so it was kind of interesting for us. But, you know, we just had a good meeting and kind of a pep rally and By then, well, what are we going to do tomorrow? Well, later we're going to go home and then we'll come back into town tomorrow. So, of course, then they decided that they would barricade the tractors on the mall. And it
was that the first day that they barricaded
mm-hmm.
them?
Mm-hmm. Well, we were only allowed to mess up the traffic in Washington, D.C. one day, mm-hmm. one time. We got our one time. And then at some point, while we were not paying attention, you know, they started driving, and you'll see the pictures on the DVD, all city buses, trucks, dump trucks, trash trucks, and lining them up bumper to bumper and surrounding the tractors that were on the mall. And actually, the three of us from Lewis were kind of didn't know what was going on because we were going on another little sightseeing trip, and we were kind of done for that day.
And so by sightseeing, you mean on foot or on your
no,
tractor?
No, on the tractor.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I wanted to make sure that was on there.
On the tractor. And so at some point in the afternoon, we decided that it was time for us to head back to the campground. So the three of us just went back, not realizing that the ones on the mall had actually were not able to leave. And so we went back and I got in the camper. I can't remember. I guess it wasn't locked, I guess. No one was there. And I'm thinking, well, I guess they'll be here pretty soon. And it got night, and it was dark, and no one. Of course, we didn't have a telephone or anything. Mm-hmm. So I think I went to bed. I was tired. And went to sleep. And then Marge, you know, they come in and say, wow, we didn't know where you were. You know, we looked all over for you down there, and we didn't know where you were. We're so glad you're here, you know, safe and sound and everything. So, and that's when we learned that all the other tractors were on the mall and barricaded and could not leave. We go, oh.
Now, how did you feel about that? Did you want to be in the mall there?
Oh, yeah. So the next morning when we went, you know, back in there, they knew that, you know, some of them knew anyway that our tractors were safe and sound out at the. Well, of course, they weren't not unhappy that they were there. They were there to tell the story. That was just part of it, and getting a lot of news coverage. But they did say you should bring the tractor and break in. And they would let you come in. You could join us. Well, I'm thinking about all the difficulties of doing that and everything. And I knew that if my tractor was impounded in there, that my husband would have to be coming back. If I went back to Lewis, flew back, he would have to be coming back to the deal. And we really did not want to do that. So none of the three of us actually were in the mall and in the little trap. But the police were pretty smart. That was a pretty good thing. We kind of got a little bit out thought on that deal. But it worked out really okay, although they did some damage on the mall. They ran over some trees and they burned a tractor in the reflecting pool and or drove it. Maybe the other one was burned. You know, they burned a tractor up. They took parts off of a old tractor and threw it over the fence on the front of the White House and things like that.
Okay. Now you stayed. You said for another week.
Stayed for 5 days there.
And what did you do during those 5 days?
I actually had a meeting scheduled with a gentleman in the FHA about our particular financial concerns and the fact that we were denied continuing support from our local FHA in Dodge City. And he gave us some ideas on the appeal and assured us if there was any way that they could, that it should be allowed and continued so we can continue farming and everything. And we did continue farming a little bit longer. And
you found that meeting helpful?
Or a little bit. Yeah. We did a lot of paperwork and with appeals and a lot of stuff that, you know, we just shouldn't have to do. If we would have had a fair price for our crops, we wouldn't have had to do that. But, and the mystery to me, well, especially since my husband died a couple years after that, and I left the farm, the big question in my mind is what would have happened if we would still be there, or we know what we would have done if we were forced to sell.
because we talked about it. Well, if we don't make it and we go bankrupt, what are we going to do? It was a very easy answer for my husband. We'll start over again. So we had the plan, but never knew exactly how that would have turned out.
Did you go to any other hearings or?
I did not go, I don't believe, to any other hearings at the Capitol. I know there were other meetings that we went to a couple of times, but you know, a lot of it we just kind of hung out and talked to people and fellow farmers. And
the other people in the tractorcade, or
yes, fellow farmers, and also the policemen were all, after the first day, very friendly and very interested. That's my recollection mm-hmm. of it. And there were other people from, I remember, from foreign countries that we talked about, and they were very sympathetic. Well, same thing where they were from.
How about the Washington, D.C.? Public.
Can't say that we met a lot of them, really. I didn't.
And you would go back and forth from the campground in
mm-hmm.
every day?
Mm-hmm. Yes, every day. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you get to do any real sightseeing while you were there?
No.
No. No.
No. Never went any buildings or Smithsonian. Of course, I had, my husband had been stationed at Fort Belvoir for a year after we were married, so, and I was didn't have to teach at that time, so we did our sightseeing at Washington D.C. before that. So, but there was no time to sightsee, nor did you feel the energy or the desire to do that. There was a lot of media attention, of course, and helicopters. Even on the other route into Washington D.C., helicopters would fly down and land near us with the media. And Daryl, people like Daryl would visit with, talk to him and stuff. So,
how about the media in general for the coverage for the whole tractorcade as you came? Did you think it was being covered? Or
Yes. There were, every place we went, it was covered because it was big news.
Mm-hmm.
And the big news was telling the locals which route we were taking so they could avoid us the next day.
I can understand that.
And trying to explain to them how big a problem it was if they had to get somewhere and cross the tractor.
Yeah, just you know, a harvest crew irritates us
sure,
today,
sure,
and
sure.
That's only a few vehicles.
You can imagine, this was, I don't know, when we were the biggest, maybe 25 miles long,
mm-hmm.
and it took a long time to pass a single given point.
Well.
Every kind of tractor and
that's a good
equipment
story problem for kids. If the tractor kid's moving
yeah.
25 miles long, moving
yeah.
at 10 miles an hour,
yeah.
how long will it take to
yeah.
pass?
Yeah, yeah, it took a long time. Well, just to leave a parking lot in the morning
yeah.
took a long time for us to leave, or to drive in to a parking lot and actually park.
Someone said you sort of did it like the wagons that you would circle in and keep circling. Do you remember that?
No.
No.
I just remember Ed would be there and point over that way, and then
and
there'd be somebody standing on top of a tractor, you know, waving over here. We always found each other, but it was, you know, you had to look. But I don't recall. I know we never parked in a circle. We mm-hmm. were parked in rows
mm-hmm.
almost always. Yeah, there
so
were
you
two
left in rows.
Yes, and there were too many. To ever park in a circle, there would not have been a large enough area.
At the time when you were there, did you feel you were having an impact on the legislators, or no? No, you gotta say it louder than that.
No.
Okay.
I do remember a meeting with Nancy Castlebaum, who
okay.
was our senator then, and she was against parity
mm-hmm.
and told why, and.
Mm-hmm.
Do
you remember any of that conversation? She has agreed to be part of this
really?
Project as
really?
Far as...
We were rather... I do recall being upset with her.
Yeah, she said she did not vote for it.
I believe, if I recall right, that it was part of another bill that wasn't going to pass anyway. So she voted no anyway. And So that whole deal when bills are attached to other bills, mm-hmm. I have no idea why they do that, and I'm sure they continue doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And then with Mr. Berglund, mm-hmm. who was the Secretary of Agriculture, no one was happy at all with any of their comments, I don't believe at all.
And how about Senator Dole?
I don't recall too much about him specifically, but I remember Nancy Castlebaum and Mr. Berglund. And
then to get home, you flew home?
I flew home, uh-huh. Greensburg Equipment from Greensburg, of course, went and brought our three tractors back, loaded them up.
And what was your reception when you got back to Lewis?
You know, I don't recall that there was any big welcome party or anything. I think we just went to the farm and continued doing what we usually did. I do not recall.
People
knew we'd done something, sure. And I know we talked about it, but there was nothing in an organized fashion mm-hmm. or anything. But we all knew that we had done something unusual that would most likely never happen again. And we did feel that we told the story. I'm sure there's a lot of disagreement on that and everything, and how effective we were. But I don't think we were immediately effective on changing any legislation or anything. Mm-hmm. Which didn't surprise too many people, I don't think. That's the way politics is.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Is it something you would do again?
Hopefully not. No, I had a long talk with myself after the tractorcade and a couple of other things that have happened in my life that I would never, I vowed to myself that I would never join another movement or cause that did not directly affect myself or my family. And so far I've kept to that, but of course I wasn't farming it, so...
You felt the tractorcade did directly affect.
Yes. But you know, it just seems like a lot of things. But I also felt that in the long run, it didn't do a lot of good mm-hmm. for people like us. So maybe it was just a waste of time in the long run. But in the short term, we felt that it was certainly important to do, mm-hmm. and someone needed to tell a story. And what better than we farmers?
And like you said, you have no way of knowing. You feel you probably would have lost the farm, or that you didn't have farm.
Most likely. I'm guessing that we would, if my husband had lived, I'm guessing that we probably would not have been able to keep farming there. But no problem. He would have got a job working for another farmer, and we would have started again somehow, some way, mm-hmm. because it's hard. If you're not a farmer, it's hard to understand the connection to the soil. Mm-hmm. So. And we both came from a long line of farmers. So, and to think that we just couldn't do it was hard.